Hello and welcome to Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo. I'm Ryan Bickle. On today's show, we have Mallory Maker here. She is on staff at Blank Park Zoo in our education department, and she had an exciting experience. She was a recipient of our staff conservation fund this year in 2019, and she recently got back from Costa Rica, and she has a lot of exciting stories to tell. And howler monkeys, and what was that new animal you were telling me about I hadn't heard before?
Apaca.
Apaca. All sorts of exciting stories. And Jesse Lowry, our Director of Conservation and Research, is here, and she's going to get today's show started.
Thanks, Ryan. I'm excited to hear from you, Mallory, today. I'm so excited that you are the recipient of the Staff Conservation Fund. And Costa Rica has a very special place in my heart. I was able to go there when I was getting my undergraduate degree and study black howler monkeys. And so I just cannot wait to hear the stories from the field. I always like to start off our show with just a brief moment to set the stage and talk about the role of zoos in saving animals in the wild. Blank Park Zoo's mission is to inspire an appreciation of the natural world through conservation, education, research, and recreation. But I see it as a window to the wild, a place where we can invite the community to come and see all of these amazing animals that we have here at Blank Park Zoo, but then be inspired to take action to save them in the wild. And Blank Park Zoo and our audience work on conservation in many different ways, and it looks different for everybody. We try to be as sustainable as possible with our daily operations. We encourage our audience to be as sustainable as possible. We know that sustainability has a direct effect on wildlife, especially native wildlife. So we encourage our audience to reduce their use of single-use plastics. And another thing that zoos can do is working locally. So we have our Plant Grow Fly Pollinator Conservation Project, where we encourage people to plant butterfly gardens. We've got our Iowa Hunters Leading the Way non-lead outreach campaign. But one of the major things that zoos can do to help protect wildlife and wild places is the support of those field organizations, those heroes that are out on the front lines working in the range countries of these endangered animals. And so a portion of every dollar that we make at Blank Park Zoo actually goes all around the world to save animals in their natural habitats, like International Rhino Foundation working in every country in which rhinos exist, Snow Leopard Trust working in Mongolia and Nepal to protect snow leopards, Hornbill Research Foundation, and many, many more. And the last few years, we have started not only financially supporting projects in the field, but also sending our staff to the field as well. Even though some may say Blank Park Zoo is a small zoo, we have 60 full-time staff that are experts in everything from animal husbandry to marketing to conservation to education and much, much more. A lot of the field programs that are out in the range countries are really working under constrained resources in harsh conditions, and we can actually help out a lot by sending our staff to aid with their projects. And Mallory was a recipient of the Staff Conservation Fund this year. And one reason why she was awarded this grant to go work in the field is because she is uniquely suited to help the project that she worked for with her background in both education and animal care. And so, Mallory, again, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, we're so excited to hear more about your experience in Costa Rica. First, let's give everybody an overview of the organization, and then we'll back up and talk about, for a few minutes, just traveling to Costa Rica and what that was like.
Sure. So I was volunteering at Wild Sun Rescue Center. It's a rescue center in the middle of the jungle in Cabuya, Costa Rica. So that's on the Nicoya Peninsula.
Wonderful. And so what is the mission of this organization?
Their mission is to rescue, rehabilitate, release, and reintroduce. So they get a lot of animals that have been injured. That's where the rescue part comes in. They fix them up. They see the vet. Some of them have to spend a little bit of extended time care there before they're ready to go back into the wild. So they're being rehabilitated and then released. And the reintroduced part is their scarlet macaw reintroduction program. So they have about 20 scarlet macaws there that they're getting ready to release back into the area this year. They have not had scarlet macaws in the area for a very long time. So that's an exciting project.
So tell us about traveling to Costa Rica and, you know, getting connected with the organization. And I'm sure that was a very exciting time for you.
It was. It took a while to get there. It was about a 6-hour flight. And then I had to get on another tiny little plane and fly over the ocean to get to Cabuya, where the rescue center is. I was very excited to meet everyone when I got there. There are a lot of volunteers and staff working there, and everyone came from different parts of the world. So it was so cool to meet people that all had the same interests and similar backgrounds as myself.
I remember when I traveled to Costa Rica and also when I went to Uganda in 2013, when you first step off the plane, you just feel that you're in a different place. Mm-hmm. Did the humidity hit you and different smells? And what did it look like when you touched down in this beautiful biodiverse hotspot?
Yeah. So when I left Des Moines, it was actually in the middle of an ice storm. So when I touched down in Costa Rica and when I stepped through the doors of the airport outside, the sun hit me. I hadn't seen sun like that in months. And it was humid and hot. And I'm still in my warm clothes from Iowa. So it definitely was a shock at first.
So you arrived to the rescue center and just kind of take us through the first couple days.
So the first couple days were more like orientation, showing me around where everything was. I went through a brief training, which was actually a little shorter than most people's because I do have a background in animal care. I already knew how to do a lot of the stuff they were doing there. So that went by pretty quickly. And once we got started working, it was getting up around 5:45 every morning if you were lucky enough to sleep in that late. The monkeys and the macaws start squawking and howling at about 4:30 every morning. So that was your natural alarm clock. We would start by making food for all the animals, getting the food out as quickly as possible. We have to do several feedings a day, so being efficient is really important. And then cleaning up after the animals. And then similar to here, when you have some extra time, you get to start making enrichment and more fun things for the animals to use as well.
About how many people were working there and volunteering, and about how many animals do they have at the center?
I would say we had about 15 volunteers along with 4 permanent staff while I was there. They also have a few local volunteers that live or winter in the area, so they come throughout the week as well. They had over 20 monkeys, 20 macaws, and then it just depends on the day as far as the other residents go. But I would say at least 30 to 40 animals at any given time.
Tell us about the different species that are at the center.
So the main species you would see there are howler monkeys. There are, I think there were 3 baby howler monkeys up in the ICU. So they were still very, very young and needing around-the-clock care and human contact. So with those babies, it's very important that they're getting skin-to-skin contact. They're feeling a heartbeat just like a human baby. If they don't get that attention, it's very bad for them, especially later. They'll start pulling out their fur and showing signs of stress. So we had the 4 babies up there and then 20 or so howler monkeys down in the pre-release area. So those are the ones that are a little bit older and getting ready to be released back into the wild. They also had a few capuchin monkeys there. I think they had 3 during my time. Those are very, very intelligent monkeys, and you have to work there for a while to be able to go in and handle the monkeys and help with their medical care because they're very smart and they will manipulate you if they get the chance. They had the scarlet macaws that I talked about earlier, a couple squirrels, just like we have here. In the springtime, baby squirrels get found injured or abandoned a lot. It's very similar to the native squirrels that we have here. Raccoon, paca, which was a large rodent, very similar to a capybara or a cavy, and they had several different bird species, different parrots, woodpeckers, things like that. They had an owl while I was there, and they also had an anteater.
Mallory, what did you think about the sound of the howling from the howler monkeys? I remember when I was in Costa Rica, I was imagining that I was, you know, in an ancient tribe of people a long time ago, hearing the howling for the first time. And I would imagine that it was a very fierce animal instead of the howler monkeys.
Yes, it wasn't what I imagined it at all. And the first time I heard it was before I'd actually got to start working with the monkeys. And the juveniles don't really make that noise. They're still kind of whining and making cute little innocent noises. But we were sitting around one night and I heard this crazy deep howling noise, and I said, "What is that?" And I got kind of scared. I looked toward the tree line, like, "Oh my gosh, what's coming?" They're like, "Oh, that's just the monkeys." I couldn't believe it.
Ryan, have you ever heard the howling of a howler monkey?
No, I haven't. And I was just thinking, what is it like compared to like the white-handed gibbons we have?
So that's what I was expecting it to sound like, but it's much deeper. It's more of like a rumbling howl.
So I would really encourage our listeners to Google the howling sound of howler monkeys, and you will have that same feeling. It sounds like a cat or something, something very fierce.
Yes.
So tell us about what the threats were and why did these animals end up at the rescue center?
Yep, there are a few main reasons. The biggest one for the monkeys especially is electric shock. So being arboreal species, living up in the trees and using their prehensile tail to swing and grab and climb, they are using power lines to get from place to place a lot. Humans have moved into that area just about everywhere, even through the jungle. There are power lines running. So those monkeys, when they touch the power line with a hand and then a separate one with a tail, they're completing the circuit and they're getting electrocuted. So that can be very dangerous for them. Another one are dog attacks for all sorts of wildlife, anything that touches the ground. There are a lot of dogs in Costa Rica, and they're not getting spayed and neutered, so they are forming wild packs, and they get very defensive over their territory, so they will surround and attack an animal if they see one. And the illegal wildlife trade. Costa Rica is home to many different species that people unfortunately think make good pets sometimes, and so they get caught, they get taken from their mothers, and then they get shipped into the black market.
So why would these animals not make good pets?
Monkeys especially, they're very cute and look cuddly when they're young, but once they grow up, they can be very dangerous animals. They're not meant to be in human care. They don't want our affection. They want to be out in the wild, and so they can get aggressive very, very quickly. They also all require very specialized care. Living in the rainforest, that's a habitat that they need to have, and people can't replicate that habitat at home.
Tell us a couple stories of some of the experiences you had. I know I saw an amazing picture of you taking care of one of those baby howler monkeys.
Yes. So my most special experience there was getting assigned to a baby monkey named Mojo. Mojo was found in the wild. He was abandoned by his troop, and he had a very bad injury to one of his arms, and they had to amputate it to help him survive. So he needed a lot of special care, learning how to climb and move around, missing one of those limbs. He needed special feedings. Because he looked a little bit different, the other monkeys would pick on him a bit. They definitely have a hierarchy, so they would push him away from the food, so he wasn't able to get to it as quickly as everyone else. So we needed to go in there and do bottle feedings about 3 or 4 times a day. And just getting to hold him and take care of him was a very interesting and cool experience for myself.
Are they mischievous?
The monkeys, yes. The little ones, not so much, but when they get older, we would have to go in there and you had to put a whole head wrap on, or they would come pull your hair. You couldn't wear jewelry, or they would try to steal it. And if they could sense a little weakness in you, they would take advantage. There were a couple people that got picked on and chased around by the monkeys.
How did your experience and your job at Blank Park Zoo prepare you for your experience in Costa Rica?
So I got through the training process really quickly. They were actually shocked at how fast I picked up on things because it is very similar work to what we do here. They just have less resources because they're in the middle of the jungle. So you just have to improvise a little bit. My education experience actually came in handy in several different ways. They had three interns working there, all on separate projects, and I was able to help them all with their individual projects on evaluating animal welfare, getting a page started on social media to promote wild bridges, a safer way for those monkeys to get around in the rainforest. And one of them was doing a research project on reintroducing spider monkeys to the area, so I could help her with some research and social media as well.
Tell us more about those natural bridges.
Yes. So they met with the power company while I was there, and this project had been in the works for a couple months. So it was really cool to be able to be there when it actually got approved by the electric company. They are ropes, just nylon ropes that they ordered from the hardware store, and they are getting hung up in the areas where the most electric shocks are recorded. So we went and talked to the locals and figured out where all those spots were, and the power company got up there and hung up the ropes so the monkeys can travel safely.
So I wonder if there's any consideration in figuring out how to make the ropes more attractive than the power lines. Did you hear any talk about that?
They didn't really discuss that while I was there. It's a green nylon rope, so it actually blended in really well, and you couldn't see them, and they don't stand out like the power lines do.
Yeah, and these primates are so smart. If any of them have ever witnessed one of their, you know, troop members getting injured, they would definitely remember that too.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, wonderful. So it sounds like you might continue your work with this organization.
Yes. Yep. So they are working on getting their sanctuary permits. So unfortunately, not all of the animals that end up at the rescue center are able to be released. They are either too imprinted on humans or too injured to go back in the wild and take care of themselves. So once they get those sanctuary permits, they'll be allowed to have permanent residence there. And they want to start doing education tours and programs to more of an extent than what they're currently doing, especially with those permanent residents. It gives people an opportunity to come and build a connection with those animals. When an animal is going to be released, you want limited human interaction, so people aren't really able to come through and see them as much. So they asked me to help develop some scripts, some educational programming to get them started once they get their permits.
One of my favorite things about Costa Rica was just walking through the rainforest and seeing all of the different plants and vines and the huge buttresses of the trees and all the native wildlife. Did you have any of those experiences, and did you get to see some animals in the wild as well as at the center?
I did. I one day visited Cabo Blanco. It's the first nature reserve in Costa Rica, and the trees, they were so big, it was almost overwhelming walking through them. And there I saw a lot of the blue morpho butterflies and coatis, which is an animal I've always wanted to see in the wild, and I got some beautiful photos as well.
And I remember thinking, oh, these are a lot of the plants that we use as houseplants. Did you realize that too?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what surprised you most about your experience in Costa Rica?
I was just surprised at how much they actually needed the help when I got there. I knew they were a volunteer-run organization, but they depend entirely on volunteers to get the work done from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. at night. And it made me really thankful for all the resources that we do have here at the zoo, that we have running water all of the time, and we have nice dishes that don't have holes in them that we have to patch up and reuse every day. I was surprised at how well they make it work with the resources that they have there.
Can you tell us about some of the animals that we have here at the zoo that come from that habitat, where you could possibly share some of your stories from Costa Rica?
Yeah, so I've already kind of switched up some of our education programs to include information about our ambassador blue and gold macaw, iguana. We have some geckos that are also from that area. And we talk about the pet trade and why these animals wouldn't make good pets and what's so special about that rainforest habitat. We also have scarlet macaws here in the Discovery Center at the zoo as well.
There was one animal before we started the show that you were talking about that's very similar to animals we have right here in Iowa. You want to talk a little bit about the raccoon?
Oh, yeah. So there was a raccoon there. Her name was Miko. It's the same kind of raccoon that we do have here in Iowa, and they are just as mischievous down there as they are here. Miko had been kept illegally as a pet, unfortunately, and was very, very imprinted on humans, and they were working on getting her dehumanized so that they could release her in the wild.
Were there any lizards at the center?
Yes. So we saw green and black iguanas. They were actually wild lizards. One iguana came in while I was there, and unfortunately it did not make it. That is part of working at the wildlife center, is a lot of animals don't make it because they are so severely attacked by the dogs or shocked. But the wild iguanas were everywhere, and they would sneak in to where the monkeys lived, crawl up onto their trays, and steal all the fruit and run away. So the iguanas had it down. They knew where they were getting their food at.
Did you see any scorpions or snakes or any animals that kind of made you stop in your tracks?
Yes. There was a tarantula that liked to guard the bathroom doors and not let us in at night. So that was kind of scary. We needed to make sure we had the lights on before we went into any of those outdoor bathrooms.
I remember when I went to Costa Rica, one of my fellow students got bit by a bullet ant. And it's named that for that reason, because it's so painful. We saw a couple fertile lance vipers, which is an animal, a snake that they call a two-stepper, because they say that within two steps, it could possibly kill you. We saw eyelash vipers, and just tons and tons of scorpions, but none in our sleeping quarters. Mm-hmm. But every single morning we would get our boots and shake them out upside down. Yep. To make sure there were no scorpions. Did you do the same?
We did the same thing. We had a special rack to hang our shoes up on to keep the scorpions and tarantulas out.
Did you see any sloths?
No sloths in the area. They haven't been there for years.
Okay. How about hummingbirds?
I did. I saw some hummingbirds. They have beautiful plants where we were staying, and the hummingbirds really like to hang out around those colorful flowers, just like here.
So what can people in central Iowa do to help protect species in Costa Rica?
First of all, making sure that you, if you are getting pets, you're getting them from responsible, reputable places. You're not buying exotic animals that might have been captured illegally from places like Costa Rica. Always reducing our use of single-use plastics. They have a lot of animals that depend on the ocean there, and we need to keep it clean. Recycling was a big part of their economy down there. There are hardly any trash cans anywhere, so that is something that we can model here ourselves, creating less waste, more recycling.
How has this experience changed your career here at Blank Park Zoo?
It's made me a little more thankful for what we do have here. Doing a similar job with less resources was an eye-opening experience, and I'm really excited to continue that partnership with Wild Sun Rescue Center through Blank Park Zoo.
What is the most unique experience that you had while you were there?
Well, I've never worked with primates before, and I don't know that I ever will be able to work with primates again. It's a really hard field to get into, so being able to have that experience while I was there, I would say, is probably the most unique for me.
How many people live in that area?
It's a very small village, so we did a 5-mile walk to the grocery store if we needed anything, and along the way you saw maybe 10, 15 houses.
And is the food unique, or, what was that like?
So at the restaurants, they had a lot of you know, food we would consider normal, pizzas and burgers and things like that. At the center, we ate a lot of local food. So it was rice, beans, tortillas, plantains. Not a lot of meat is served there. If it is, it's seafood or poultry.
And what was one thing that really changed your idea of what you thought you were going to get into?
Well, I guess I didn't realize that there would be as many people there. So it was really, really nice to learn how to work with a team of different types of people from different backgrounds.
Mallory, thank you so much for all the work that you have done. We're excited to hear your story from Costa Rica. And it sounds like you made a huge impact on that organization. And you were just the perfect candidate for the Staff Conservation Fund. Because of your experience with education and animal care. Would you consider doing something like this in the future?
Absolutely.
Well, I know that there are a lot of field organizations out there that need help. How do people find out more about the center that you worked at?
So you can look up Wild Sun Rescue Center on Facebook. That is where they post most of their updates, and they are running a lot of campaigns to raise money for much-needed medical equipment there. You can also help donate to the Scarlet Macaw Reintroduction Fund.
And how do people find out more information about the education work that you do here at Blank Park Zoo?
So you can go to blankparkzoo.com and click on the Education tab to see all of the different programs we have.
Thank you so much for being with us today, Mallory.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you for joining us today. And if you want to learn more about Blank Park Zoo, head over to our website at blankparkzoo.com. And as we're coming into the summer season, we have lots of events coming up. And so we hope to see you here soon at the Blank Park Zoo. Well, we'll see you next time on Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo.